Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thanks for joining me for hour two of the All of It Summer Reading List. Our next guest was listed as one of Publisher Weekly's Writers to Watch in 2019. Lauren Wilkinson's debut novel is American Spy. It's written in epistolary form in the aftermath of an assassination attempt on a single mother with two young sons. The year is 1992. We learn the mom, Marie Mitchell, was a globe-trotting spy during the Cold War. The story brings us from the U.S. to Martinique and then to Burkina Faso, centering on a real-life revolutionary figure, Thomas Sankara. Throughout the journey, we see Marie navigate various places and systems as an outsider on the inside. The book has received wide acclaim and earned its author comparisons to John le Carré and other spy novel greats, while also breaking ground for representation in the white male-dominated genre, because our heroine, Marie, is a black woman. I spoke with Lauren recently, and we began by talking about how this novel, American Spy, was born out of a writing prompt. Take a listen.
The prompt was to write a story set in suburbia that wasn't your typical suburban story, not your typical middle-class, white, you know, focused on longing kind of narrative. So the first image that came into my mind was of a mother who, by all appearances, looked like a typical suburban mom, but then an assassination attempt would reveal that that was not the case about her.
Yeah, because it says, the first chapter, it says 1992, Connecticut.
Yes, as suburban as we get. So yeah, and then it mushroomed from there.
And we also learned, it's so funny that I didn't know that before I read the book. And now that I'm thinking about just the description of the layout of the house as the intruder is there, I'm like, oh, she really does live in a suburban house in Connecticut as she's trying to scramble to find her gun.
Yes, and as I was picturing it, I was also thinking, picturing her on a cul-de-sac, maybe someplace where the neighbors might hear. Yeah,
and she'd be concerned about that, actually. What, when you said it's suburban in a different way, part of, you know, you think about these suburban stories, a lot of them deal with unhappiness and station in life, and I don't like my life, and life is boring. How did that play into your decision to make it a spy novel, or did it?
It did, because I think just the exact opposite of that in my mind was a spy novel.
Right.
Like she doesn't have the time to be feeling this suburban ennui because, you know, of her previous life pressing on her current one.
Did you consider any other vehicles to tell her story, or was it always going to be a thriller?
I had a thriller in mind for most of it. I definitely, you know, I merged a thriller and family drama because I knew I wanted to write a spy, but that was, you know, who we understood her full story. We understood the choices that she made that led her to this particular career path. And I feel like those kinds of things always start with the family. You know, your family really, that's the crucible that your personality and your choices are forged in. So I felt like, for me, that was a natural thing to combine those two elements, spy and family drama.
As someone who has obviously studied creative writing, and this may sound like a really dumb question, but I'm truly curious. When you were studying creative writing, is there, can you teach somebody how to write a thriller? Are there parameters, are there instructions, are there, or is it just another form of writing and you have to use your imagination?
I think you can teach writing. I think that there are many things to teach, in fact, about writing, and I'm very strict and conservative about that. You know, I think we need to understand, we've been telling stories as a society for thousands of years. We've come up with some patterns that deserve to be analyzed and considered. But I don't think, as you were saying, no, I don't think that we can teach imagination. You know, you kind of have to off-road it a bit. Every writer has to figure out what their voice is going to be like and how they're going to tell a story. So I think maybe it's a bit of a cheap answer, but both. You can definitely teach the construction, but then, you know, inspiration and how you tell a story, kind of, that comes down to the individual writer.
So it's interesting you said that. I'm very conservative and strict about certain things. What are you conservative and strict about?
Well, just the fact that, you know, there are story structures that exist. And then, you know, in order to subvert them, you really need to understand them very well. Mm-hmm. And I think that a few people, you know, at certain points in their career feel like, I'm just going to subvert them without knowing them well enough to do so. So, you know, when I teach, and I'm actually teaching a class that starts on the 13th, the first thing I will tell those students is, you know, don't do that. I want to know that you know how a story functions, like in terms of beginning, middle, and end, you know, in terms of getting to a climax of a story and then resolving it before you do the more, you know, the robe grier, the more experimental type of writing.
I always describe it as like with music. A jazz musician, you have to know your scales, your notes, your theory, and then you can improvise in between, but you need that foundation.
Absolutely.
I think about even with, you know, journalism, with these kind of jobs, you have to have a structure for the interview, for the show, and then you can freestyle in between.
I completely agree. I think visual artists also, a quote that's often misattributed to Picasso is that you have to learn the rules before you can break them. He didn't actually say that, I don't think, but you can understand why.
You can understand why it would be attributed to him as well, right?
Yeah.
My guest is Lauren Wilkinson. The name of her book is American Spy, her new novel. What went into the decision to have us learn the story through letters?
Well, so when I first wrote this book, it was in third person, and Marie was a bit of a mystery to me. She wouldn't reveal her secrets to me either as the writer, because which made sense, because she was a spy, and her whole, you know, what has been keeping her alive up until this point is her ability to keep secrets. So I switched it to first person to try to get a little closer to her. And then when I switched it to her writing to her sons, the only people who I can imagine her being completely honest with, that's when the book kind of started to come together for me as a writer in telling them the truth about herself. My main character started to tell it to me. It was a bit weird, a little surreal, but yeah, that was my experience with that.
What was the character keeping from you in the third person? What couldn't you get at about
Marie?
Just
all the you know, she in the novel is approached and asked to help destabilize Sankara's government, and so her role in that I couldn't access until she started telling the truth to her twin sons.
Because she had to explain it.
Yeah.
Because she had to also kind of come to grips with it
herself. She had to admit it. Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, this is a question for later down, but I think we're kind of here at this point in the conversation. One of the things I really found interesting and thoughtful and made me think about things, and I think that's what in my life or things I've witnessed, is that sense of you being given assignment to do something, which in the process of doing so, you realize is at odds with your own personal integrity.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do? Because you're someone who wants to do your job well, and you've been sort of trained and programmed to do that. But you know, she realizes in going in to destabilize this country that maybe that isn't the right thing to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Her loyalty is assumed. And then I think she starts to realize why. And does this loyalty serve me? Does this patriotism serve me? And I think it's a difficult thing for her to confront that it may not, that it really isn't.
You wrote in an interview where somebody was talking to you about how you came to develop Marie and her character, and you said something so interesting. You said, a spy who has a complex emotional life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why was it important in some ways? I mean, I understand why we want multidimensional characters, but why did you want to explore her emotions?
Because she's a Black woman, and I didn't want her to appear from nowhere. I wanted her to have an emotionally complicated life, because I gravitate toward Black female characters who have a full range of emotions, and I want to see more of them in the world. So I figured, you know, this is my first book. I may not get another shot. I'm going to give it as much as I can.
Yeah, a lot of YA, young adult novels seem to be a little bit ahead of grown-up novels in terms of the way they describe women and people of color and, you know, even men. I mean, they just seem to have more access to their emotions. These books seem to I don't know, they seem to be ahead of everybody in terms of emotional intelligence and people's and the willingness for the reader to take it in, considering the readers are so much younger, allegedly, than grown-up fiction. Why do you think that is? I'm curious from your point of view as someone who also teaches writing.
Mm-hmm. That is hard for me to say. It must have something to do with the audience, you know, that teenage, I think that maybe why literature is written for an audience who is examining those feelings for the first time. And
so,
you know, the books are saying, like, this is okay, this is normal, you know, you feel this thing, we all sort of feel this way. So I think that they're instructive in that way, and there's room for that. And maybe the assumption with adult literature is that grown-ups already have those feelings in check. They've managed them, they've experienced them, which is a bold assumption.
So I
still think it's important to kind of give a whole range of experience in you know, books that are written for adults too.
So for our listeners, you're like, okay, tell me more about Marie. I need to know more about Marie Mitchell. Can you describe her a little bit for our listeners?
Well, she is a little emotionally stunted. And I think that's why I put in, you know, her sister is a major character. Her father is a major character. Her mother. I put that in to kind of express that and why she is the way that she is, because I don't think that she can. She's very, very intelligent and is aware of her intelligence and is... but still is kind of shunted aside at work. She's working for the FBI in the 80s. So that felt like that would be very true experience for a black woman in this environment. But she does have an emotional blind spot with the people that she really loves. And so she feels that she is someone who it's difficult to trick. But I think that people who work in her emotional blind spot and one kind of surrounds her sister, they're able to trick her quite easily. So,
How does ambition play into her decision making?
I think she's incredibly ambitious and makes a lot of choices based on that ambition. She wants to see herself, she wants to be successful, you know, in a way, a very strict definition of that she starts with. You know, she wants to be a special agent in charge, you know, because that's the vision that she has. And then I think she starts to ask herself in the second half of the book, why do I want to do that?
And what do I have to do to get that?
And what do I have to do to get that? And what do I have to give up to get that?
My guest is Lauren Wilkinson. The name of her book is American Spy. And it's interesting because the cover is American Spy, and it's all crackled. And it's a picture of a black woman, and she's draped in the flag of, it's Burkina Faso, correct?
No, it's American flag, but, you know, with...
But the colors.
Yes, with the African-American flag colors, yeah.
It's such an interesting cover. What did you think when you first saw it?
I loved it. Yeah, I was really, really excited. They gave me 3 or 4 options, and I knew immediately that this is the one that I wanted. Yes.
What does it tell you? What about it made you think, yes, this is the right image for my book?
Well, I thought that the color palette was really, really smart. You know, I think it's Greg Hammonds who has like a flag like this, the African American flag. I've seen it recently. It's hanging up in the New School, and sort of to reflect her experience as an American in an image felt like a really tall order. So I was very impressed with how they managed to do that.
Yeah, because as soon as I saw it, I said, I have to figure out what this is. I hadn't recognized it. And then I went and looked at the Burkina Faso flag, and I was like, oh, it is, but it isn't. Which, you know, just it's an interesting cover. It really catches your eye.
Mm-hmm. And yes, it plays with a lot of the Pan-Africanist flag colors, you know. So I thought it was a really clever approach. But still, you know, American is as big as day and the flag is an American flag. So, you know, I think it gives us both of those elements.
My guest is Lauren Wilkinson. We're talking about her novel, American Spy. We're going to take a quick break. And after the break, we'll learn a little bit more about why she decided to include a real-life historical character in her book and learn a little bit more about him and Marie Mitchell after a quick break. Welcome back. You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. This is a special edition of All of It. The theme, the All of It Summer Reading List. I've been talking to Lauren Wilkinson about her debut novel, American Spy. It's an espionage thriller whose protagonist is a young black FBI intelligence officer, a woman named Marie Mitchell. Part of the novel takes Marie to Martinique and to Burkina Faso in West Africa. I asked Lauren Wilkinson about the kind of research she did when writing the book and whether she traveled to the countries she sent her protagonist to.
Maybe about a year after I signed the contract for this novel, I visited the country, and it was a wonderful experience. She travels around the country on a motorcycle. There is a bit of an action sequence. And that is based on my real experience on a moped for the first time, my first time on a manual vehicle at all, because that was by far the best way to get around. I had such a great time there. I met a lot of really wonderful people, including someone who, a friend of a friend, led me to actually meet and have a conversation with someone who knew Sankara, someone who actually had run for president in the country a few years before I met him, and someone who was alive and around during the coup, and actually was chased out of the country in a very exciting fashion. Soldiers with their guns blazing, kind of following him, chasing him toward Ghana, where he was in exile for years. And he was an incredible person. He shared with me the poetry that he wrote when he was in exile, both in English, both in English and in French. And it was just sort of an unbelievable experience to really speak to someone who knew Sankara firsthand and saw what he was trying to do and accomplish for his country and his people.
Had you gone there with the idea that you were going to include Thomas Sankara as a character in this novel?
Yes, absolutely. I wanted to be there because I felt like I would need to understand who he was in the context of the country that he had been trying to lead. It felt like if I stayed in New York and I read interviews and saw documentaries, that would be good, but I wouldn't get the whole picture unless I'd actually went to the country. It was 30 years late, but it still felt crucial. And his memory, his legacy is still, you can still feel it. I still saw young people with Sankara shirts, silkscreen mm-hmm. shirts. There are still murals of him, where he's buried it's been decorated. People still really love him. Everyone has an opinion. Any person on the street has an opinion about Sankara.
You often see, and sometimes shorthand is not correct, but sometimes it is. So I'm asking you, as somebody who's researched it, and you've clearly integrated it into your story, and you know a lot about it. People have described him as the African Che Guevara.
Yes.
How do you feel about that?
I always think those kinds of descriptions are, yes, as you said, shorthand. Not exactly a perfect comparison, but I understand it. He was very young when he was in power, 35. He did ride around the city on a motorcycle. He was a big admirer of Che's as well, and actually had invited his son mm-hmm. to the country for the 20th year anniversary of Che's death. So yes, I do understand it. He had that charisma as well, I think, that made him very compelling.
And Sankara features in the book because Marie Mitchell is sent there. We'll use the word observe
to observe for him. In quotes.
and she starts to question about what she's sent there to do.
Mm-hmm. Because I think, she sees firsthand things that were true about Sankara, that he really did galvanize and, improve the condition of millions of people in a very short period of time, was a big advocate for women's rights. And so there were women in his government that was mm-hmm. That was new, was interested in the environment and the encroaching of the desert. Which is negatively affecting people. He did a lot of tree planting. One of his slogans was, "He who feeds you controls you." So it was really pushing back against debt, international debt, and felt like it was a yoke around the necks of his people. Millions of children were vaccinated. So many initiatives. Like, he really boosted the literacy in the country, literacy rates, by like 30% or something. So I did a lot.
My guess is Lauren Wilkinson, the name of her book is American Spy. You're not a spy that I know of.
I wouldn't tell.
Good answer for a possible spy. How much of you is in this book? Is there anything of you that's in this book, of your story, of your family story?
Yeah, a lot of me is in this book. So how I approached this was to write someone who was emotionally pretty close to me, and then to put her in a situation in which I would never be in. So that combination was a bit difficult. There were certain drafts where, you know, she has my instincts for self-preservation, so she wouldn't, you know, go and spy and really be in the fray, and that was a much more boring story. So I kind of had to force her in certain cases to do spy work, to kind of go undercover. But yeah, that she's definitely a lot like me. A lot like me and a lot like my mother. She has my mother's birthday.
Oh, wow. How many rewrites did you have to do?
A ton. So many. I mean, at least six. You know, I ended up having to write it over and over again because it wasn't a question of editing something. I would sort of edit something in the beginning or try to change it in the beginning, and it would kind of knock everything out of you know, out of order. So it was kind of like a line of Christmas lights where if one is out earlier, then the rest of them all go out. And so for me, the successive drafts were trying to get it further lit up until I could get the whole thing lit up. And yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't feel by the end of it that I was necessarily finished, but my editor was like, you need to stop. You need to stop writing this. And I think that's the experience of a lot of writers. You know, it's not exactly maybe the book on the shelf isn't totally what they were anticipating or expecting, but, you know, it's finished. It's you move on to your next thing.
Has anyone shown any interest in optioning it yet?
Yeah, it has been optioned. I've signed the paperwork, so I feel okay.
That's so exciting.
Talking about it, yes, by a British company, which was a surprise, but very interesting, DNA Films. So I'm really excited. They've done so many books. I mean, so many movies that I love. Trainspotting, which is a big fan. I'm a big fan of 28 Days Later, which scared me.
Yes.
Annihilation, Ex Machina. So yeah, I love them.
My guest has been Lauren Wilkinson. She's the author of American Spy. You're listening to All of It on WNYC. Coming up next, a conversation with Tony-nominated actor Andrew Reynolds about his book, Too Much Is Not Enough, a memoir of fumbling toward adulthood. Stay with us.